Welcome back to Bibliosinensis.
Wow.
I know, it's been a long time. Forgive us.
I will cheer to that.
Cheers.
Hi, everyone.
What are we drinking today?
So, I wasn't sure if this was going to be a formal episode or an in-the-wings episode, so I thought it'd be nice to change it up by serving you a Darjeeling from one of my lectures this past year.
Oh, yeah. You were actually doing lectures along the way between seasons.
Yeah, there's a lot of catching up, which is, I think, why we're doing a new episode.
Yeah. Needless to say, yes.
To say the least, we've definitely been really rethinking Bibliosinensis and how it can be more beneficial to just T-Spectral business as a whole, but also reach a broader audience.
And furthering our establishment.
Yeah.
So, welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back. before we get into it, for all of the T-Nerds that are out there, this is actually a second flush Tom Song estate.
How hard was this to get?
I mean, I went through one of my brokers, but fortunately, the Tom Song region and just the retreats in Tom Song are still very much alive.
Thank you, COVID, for not killing that.
Yeah, well, what helped was it's kind of a preservation center. It's not just a tea plantation. People use it for wellness and retreats, and there's actually, on this one in particular, one of the local river goddesses has a temple.
Oh.
So, it's just as good vibe as you can imagine, but they turned the original estate of the European colonizer. Mm-hmm. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, they turned his estate into a wellness retreat on it, so
fantastic.
It's really fascinating, actually. So you have, like, this interesting colonial-esque building that's been turned into, like, an Airbnb, theoretically.
Yeah.
And people get to enjoy the culture of tea and tea farms and see the whole process, but at the same time, appreciate the local culture that's been there for centuries.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So Tom Song is definitely on my list of travels.
Oh.
But yeah, that's this tea that we're drinking. I personally love that you have that very distinct Darjeeling Muscatel to it.
Yes.
But I definitely taste like that rainy, cool floral notes. And yeah. I really like that. Aww. I don't know. Did you pick up anything?
To be honest, it's been a long time since I've even tasted Darjeeling.
Mm.
So this is all just coming back to me now.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess a quick crash course for those of you that aren't tea nerds but are trying to become tea nerds. Darjeeling is very distinctly known for its Muscatel notes, which is, if you're into wine, that note is in wine, and it comes from the skins of the grapes, particularly red wines, that bite aftertone.
Right.
But because the soil is so dense and rainy in Darjeeling, you get a similar effect with the leaves.
That's fantastic.
So there you have it. That's what we're drinking. And lo and behold, it's a rainy day in LA.
Oh my goodness. I have never seen so much gray in the sky until this winter.
I love it, personally. It's insane. I know a lot of people have been complaining about the colder weather this past month? 2 months.
I would say two months, yes.
I love it. I haven't gotten sick of it yet. Maybe I need to reconsider moving somewhere rainy.
Right. And I have been learning how to use an umbrella.
Lo and behold.
My gosh.
I know. I actually thoroughly impressed at how many sweaters I own now because it's just not shaken.
Yes. Yes. My sweaters have gotten thicker and thicker and thicker. And I think I've actually gotten to the point of wearing some of the, some of the heirlooms that my dad left me.
Yes.
London Fog.
Your trench coat.
Trench coat. Yes. Ooh, those things are heavy, and I swear you're supposed to wear those for 0 degree weather.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
I mean, my fur boots have definitely increased in amount. I have one, like, a pair of each color.
You,
I mean,
are the Imelda of fur boots.
Of, what is it, bear paws?
Yes, bear
paws. I even have one for the shed. I have slippers for the shed, too. And I finally got to wear out my fleece coat that I made during COVID.
Ah, fantastic.
Off of the Vogue pattern. Yes. That 1930s capelet that I put a fleece, like, basically it's a snuggie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a sophisticated snuggie off of a Vogue pattern. But I love it so much. anyways, yeah, there is a lot to catch up on. I hope that 2022 treated everyone well.
Wait, what? We were supposed to be treated well? Excuse me?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of changes in my life personally. And I know that, I don't know, 2023 is looking really promising.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since the whole world is wide awake. I used to say that the world is awake, you know, in 2022, but no, it's wide awake now.
Everyone's having insomnia issues.
I hear children screaming at restaurants again.
Yeah, actually.
Yes, we didn't have that before.
What's another thing that I've really noticed is, usually January is like the slowdown date, but nobody is slowing down.
No.
And we're all, what, we have a few more days till it's over, and it's like nobody missed a beat. Like, the holiday season never had a hangover. It's like Hair of the Dog, you know?
Exactly. Oh, but the libraries are open. They're all open. Oh, huzzah.
I wanted to go check out the Huntington Beach Library because of their impressive waterfall sculpture that's 3 stories high, and you can apparently read next to a waterfall.
Yes, yes.
So I think another thing that really inspired this episode is we finally got to go visit a new used bookstore.
Yes.
Yesterday, and you...
Next Chapter Books.
Yes. Which is exciting, because it's in Canoga Park, which is...
Is it Canoga Park?
Is it Canoga? It's in the valley. It's on the outskirts. Topanga Canyon, I think.
Yes, it's in Topanga. Because that's just the problem with that area. It's Chatsworth, and then there's, you know, a few bunch of hills.
Yeah.
And there's Canoga Park, at which we're kind of in the border of.
Yes.
And when we say we mean to say.
Yeah, so one of the biggest announcements, which I guess we might as well get out of the way, is T-Spectral is going to be finding its home at what we are establishing as Cove Arts and Wellness in Topanga Canyon area. We have a physical location.
Yes.
And it's actually a collective where, we're working with a few nutritionists and,
yoga practitioners.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, we want to add the arts aspect of it. So we're going to have painting and tea nights. We're looking to create a few other extra classes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So the whole center is going to be focused on the idea of self-love through creativity and health.
And, we do apologize for being quiet for so many months, but we have been building.
Yes, we have been. It's just been, you'll see in the, we're going to be kickstarting the social media for Cove soon, but
yeah.
Long story short, the office that we got used to be like a metalhead den.
Yeah. Oh, so much foam to get through.
So whatever was in there, if it, like, what in the SoundCloud wrapper, metal, whatever, there was graffiti all over the walls. The walls were painted black.
Yeah, yes.
There are dimmers on everything, even the ceiling's black, which we're trying to figure out. I kind of want to keep the
dimmers. They're really cool.
Yeah, but it's just, it's this hodgepodge. And then when you enter the main room, it's like a... I don't even know how to describe it. It looks like an old law firm from the 90s. Like, it's got these, like, Greek columns or something.
It's a big hodgepodge.
That's what it is.
But we're trying to fix it. We're almost there.
We're almost done with priming the black walls. That's our main concern, because
it was, like, dark.
Yeah. But yeah, we're going in partnership. The person in charge, I guess, would be Kelly Hutt.
Yes. And
Kelly is, we know Kelly from Hive Market. If you've been seeing our post, we've been doing monthly markets with her, at Esoterica. And yeah.
It's this wonderful place where it's LGBT friendly. It has crystals and, tarot card readings.
It's a metaphysical shop.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but they do, like, love the local community, and it's really cool. Like, we do pop-up events there with local artists every month.
Yes. So, yeah. Just wait for the announcement.
Yeah, you'll see it soon. We just finished the logo design for it. We can't wait to make sweatshirts and all the good things, but,
most importantly, you can pick up your tea locally.
Yes. And also, we will be doing more regular events in this space. So.
You should actually mention that as well, because along with your lectures online...
Yeah, so we're going to try to make the tea lectures and tea education available online.
On a more frequent basis.
Yes, but we're also going to be doing blending workshops and, like I mentioned earlier, tea and paint and... making physical lectures available with actual tea cuppings.
Yes.
We
get to shake hands at last.
Yeah.
If you guys are nearby.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yes.
Looking forward to having a space like that. And I know that we're bringing on a nutritionist as well, but she believes in understanding health food choices through exploring the world.
Yes.
And so she's really excited to come on board, and she wants to learn more about our Filipino heritage and how to incorporate, you know, those elements as well. So it's a different spin off the typical, oh, eat chicken and broccoli.
Yes.
So that's going to be cool. And we're definitely taking that aspect and pairing it with tea education as well.
Yes.
For a full, well-rounded experience. So very much looking forward to it.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been busy.
We have been busy. We're exhausted. We do apologize for that as well.
Yeah.
The energy that we used to have has just been invested so hard into what we wanted Bibliosynensis to become.
Yes. And so I think you should cover that before we go further with Cove and everything else, like in terms of our nonprofit Azure Lorica. You're working on some new things?
Yes.
I know you can't go into too much detail, but the publishing house is going to be getting some new authors.
Yes. As you guys all well know, we've had our main three lately with Luke, Stefan, and Kimmy. Basically, the poet, the artist, and at that point, Kimmy is both in
essence. She's the double threat.
Yeah, she is the double
the
threat.
The manga artist.
Yeah. Her comics are, you know, wonderful. They're cute. Please, you know, if you can find her on Instagram, please go right ahead and actually support her. She'll be at your local Comic Cons at, it's not Missouri, is it?
Yeah, she's in Missouri.
Missouri? Okay. So, catch her. We'll share it on you know, Bibliosinensis.
She's just so wonderful. And, like, for those of you that lived through that era, we actually met her through DeviantArt.
Oh!
When we were younger. And, yeah, she asked us to be her mentor. So it's like this running gag that Eugene and I are her online internet dad and mom.
Yeah.
And we wear it with a badge of pride. Yeah, so.
We paid for her DeviantArt membership.
That's like, right.
Yeah. But yeah, as you have seen on the website, on Azure Lorica, the publishing side, we have three authors. And this year we will be releasing at least two authors. The ones that I've confirmed is Zena. She is coming out with this wonderful book in lieu of her own experience.
Yeah, I don't want to give away everything, but I love the fact. So Zena's been a friend of mine for years.
Yes.
And she is basically, unfortunately, which is a common thing in the Philippines, is one of the many drug addict orphans from the Philippines. And she,
you mean an orphan?
An orphan due to drug addiction. She's not
due
drug
addict. To her parents' drug addiction.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, she's not. Of course. Anyways, she was given to her adoptive parents in a rice sack.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really sad case. They literally, like, picked her off the streets in it. And she didn't actually learn she was adopted until she was, like, a preteen.
Which I would have done the same. I mean, you don't tell a child that we picked you off of a rice sack and kind of say,
yeah,
here you are.
But she's been working a lot through that kind of trauma. She even knows her actual birth mom and... It's an interesting story, but along the line, she became a life coach.
Yes.
During COVID, and she took her energy and moved it into that. And
this is actually a fantasy piece.
Yeah, this is, so she created basically a fantasy biography.
Yeah.
Of her life.
Yes.
And she wrote a children's book. So everything's over-fantasized and interesting. It kind of reminds me of, like, a children-friendly version of Pan's Labyrinth, where their symbolism is there, but it's cheerful and...
Yes.
It's fascinating. It's, like, almost surreal. But she's using it to be a teaching tool of emotional intelligence and how parents should deal with their kids in serious conversations.
That feels like Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, but, how it was an actual dare?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you guys don't know, Dr. Seuss was actually dared to write books for children to actually understand, what was it? It was to actually give children a perspective over adult life.
Oh, like the perspective and the challenges. Yes.
Yes.
And yeah, that's what Horton Hears a Who is about.
Exactly. Yeah. And introducing the second, last but not least, is our very own host, Stephanie Warner.
Yeah. So I took the winter to really just focus on two things that matter to me. And that was... writing. I've always wanted to be a solo published. I mean, we've done it with the plays.
Yes.
And I've done articles, and I've even done a bit of ghostwriting in my professional career, but I've never actually published myself, like, yes, a book by myself. And it's something that I've wanted for years. I mean, I did the math. It's almost been 20 years and I've been working on this particular book.
Yeah.
But I am releasing a first book before I release my novels. And this one's more of a short story, essay, coffee table book. The working title is called Brewing.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if I'm going to have 12, but I know for sure it'll have at the very least 10 short stories.
Right.
But yeah, it's 10 short stories that are around the inspiration of tea and how tea has memories in it. I discuss a lot about, like, cafe life growing up, my professional career behind the scenes, just all sorts of different little memories, even like when I was 16.
Yeah.
Like the first time I had my my very first blended tea. And I was actually really inspired to write this book because if you have been following us for a while now, you know that I wrote a featured article of Tea Spectral for World Tea News. And the editor, Aaron Keel, was amazing. He conjured up like a bazillion questions for me to reply to. And instead of shying away, I just dove in and I really wrote and replied to every single answer. Probably a little more candid than I should have been. but that just happened to be the main article of the year. It was the most clicked on. And that's, to me, was just powerful and incredible. And so it was really great to just share, like, I guess, the more personable hospital side.
Mm-hmm.
And being in the tea industry for as long as I have, it's kind of just a known fact that you're supposed to publish a book or add your two cents if you want to be seen as a professional. And for me, you know, trying to be a little different and quirky, I suppose I wanted to bring out more of the hospitable side, the humanistic side.
Rather than creating the next dictionary. The
dictionary textbook. So that's what really inspired this. Also, my absolute love of memoirs.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think it's really a nice personable piece. I'm really excited to see not just people read it. I'm like a little less concerned about the feedback. I'm more concerned about just bringing an awareness to the beverage and like how it makes you feel and the idea of gathering and just like the culture behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we've always been more worried about the culture of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And how the snobbery just has to end already.
Mm. Yes.
So, this is a new generation of tea drinkers. And to deny them access to what Starbucks has already, like, flourished in, is just counterintuitive.
And
yeah. You're already... You've already built a company that allowed you to give people a taste of high quality, loose leaf tea.
Blended,
even. And there are people out there, I'm not going to say names, there are people out there that still want everybody to feel like tea is a half-lutin problem.
Well, that's the thing, is just, I've been in the industry for over 10 years now. I can't believe I can even say that. And I've just noticed this idea of, because we're afraid to offend, a lot of people will not mention tea trends. And to me, that's sad, because this culture has literally grown overnight in our own backyards, even. Nobody's talking about it, really. Like, there's some publications in the news, but as terms of like the books, this era, yeah, there's nothing really discussed about it.
Well, I think what the problem is they're still trying to hold on to the friction.
Yeah.
Because without this insurrection that you and I are participating in,
unfortunately,
there's nothing to be said. There's nothing to be said, because the higher ups, they make what they want. And the naysayers will keep neighing.
Mm.
And they don't realize that without, I guess, the subject matter growing with the new tea drinkers,
mm-hmm,
they're just going to lose people that are interested in the tea.
Yeah.
And it'll lead to the destruction of the culture, and or rather just the disappearance of it, actually.
My main concern also is just the general idea of giving people permission to try things.
And that's what people need, actually.
It's surprising, you know, I know some of you are out there listening to this, I'll try whatever the hell I want. It's like, well, that's nice, but some people are really conscious about doing it right or doing it wrong, and I mean, we need to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, dare I say, there are some great ways to prepare tea, but also there's no real wrong way to prepare tea.
Right.
Right? Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm probably going to be, like, chided for this, but...
You're going to be chided because you're about to release a book.
Yeah, I might as well get used to it. If one person can only do anything but microwave their hot water...
Oh, yes.
That's how they're going to make their tea that way. You know what I mean? Like, it's a means to the end.
Right.
But you cannot tell that person that that's not going to be a cup of comfort for them at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Could it be made better? Absolutely. But that's that person's cup of tea.
It is.
You know? Pun intended, I suppose, but...
Hashtag mug life.
So, just giving that permission, I think, but also just creating a fondness about it and a nostalgia and the idea of that pause and repose.
Yes.
That's what I'm hoping that my book will bring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll bring more opportunity for those that actually enjoy the culture and don't have access to every tea farm in the world.
Yeah.
So, in that, I'm wondering, what should we be looking forward to in this place that you'll be doing the tea lectures? I mean, the techniques that you're actually going to be providing, are they going to be the traditional techniques? Are we going to be
You know what? I am looking forward to eventually, over time, bringing in, first and foremost, I think, especially since it's a wellness center, I really want to bring in, like, matcha culture.
Okay. I know it's in the valley. Are we inviting the Japanese culture
we
center?
We can.
Because I know there's a bunch of, like...
But I'm looking more on what they call the wabi-sabi.
Okay. I was about to mention the 18-year-old girls that actually have to make tea as a ceremony.
Yeah, that's more of,
Is it 18 or 16? I forgot what the age is.
I don't know, but I don't remember. But I know there's two, like, mindsets. And the one I'm going for is the wabi, which the term wabi-sabi comes from, which means perfection and the imperfect.
Right.
But I'm just looking for, you know, ways to take traditional methods of meditation, which is matcha to me, is a great ritual. Like the whisk, the bowl. I mean, I even had my whisk holder imported from Japan. It was hand-kilned for me to match my cup.
Nice.
And I hold those really dear. They're on display in the shed. And if ever I do some early journaling, the first thing I will go for is a matcha in traditional form with a whisk. But I just want to bring more of that tea education. I was actually looking forward to introducing people to Gong Fu style tea. Mm. I know that I want to start doing more flights.
Yes.
So up until now, Tea Spectral is really focused on blending fantasy blends.
Yes.
But this year, I'm really looking forward to bringing in more traditional teas.
And how everybody else around the world has created their own version
of
what the right way is.
That's actually one of the reasons I also brought out the Darjeeling that we're drinking, because these teas I brought during the lectures, and one of my most popular lectures is the histories and legends of tea around the world. And we do talk about Darjeeling and its role. And, I'm just looking forward to introducing people to the world in general.
When you say gung fu, it's not martial arts where you just like punch and kick some sort of teapot. No, right?
I think you're thinking kung fu tea. Please elaborate. It's a tea ceremony. You can go really hard with it or really not hard. But I think gung fu is a little more of the casual version where it's like you have a tea tray. You do two pours. One, you pour in the tea to smell it.
Yes.
And the second one, you pour into the cups, and then you taste it.
Right.
So it's enveloping all your senses. Unlike traditional or American tea, I guess you can say, the loose leaf is of utmost importance to it.
Yeah.
And the leaves are really big off of those. Usually they're Taiwanese-style teas with, like, the big dewy leaves.
Yeah.
The oolongs. And, yeah, basically it's just the whole process of admiring the leaf, the flavor profile, the roundness. And you're made to brew that tea like two or three times to taste the different temps and what have you.
Yes.
And it's a really beautiful ceremony. I think it's really crazy that we don't even have that in some cafes here. I know there's only one place in LA that I know that serves it.
To be straight, like, there is no way we would have even known that this existed before.
Well, we would practice it. It's just...
We didn't know what it was.
We didn't know what it was. We just thought, oh, this is like the old school Chinese way of preparing tea. Yeah. I mean, you got me my first gung fu tea.
Yes.
With a pu'er. That'll probably be in the book, but...
Which is why I was trying to elude what gung fu is. It's basically another word for meditation.
Yeah.
It's isolating yourself to do some sort of activity. It's not a chore. It's an activity. And allows you to just clear your mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Japanese do it too, but they don't call it gung fu.
No.
So, yes, it's a ritual. But no, it is not anything... there's nothing really spiritual about it.
No, but the ceremony of it is very interesting because I feel like it's like just honoring the labor that goes into prepping a good tea.
Yes.
And also just there's several elements to it, like acknowledging smells, acknowledging the agriculture behind it.
Yeah.
The people that labored to it, making it.
Yeah, like getting the highest flavor from it.
Yeah.
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 It's, okay, for those that don't drink tea, which I don't know who you are and why you listen.
But, you know, there are a lot of you, which impresses us. So we
are grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's just like coffee. You know, you go right ahead and actually choose, you know, light roast, dark roast, etc. And you appreciate that stuff when you drink it because it is at the level of, you know, deepness that you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as subtle as tea, I will say that. But I'm pretty sure for those coffee drinkers that have their favorite mug, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. You don't exactly just pick up a French roast and actually demand and expect an Italian roast.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're both dark roasts.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of respect it when you actually drink it. And you hope other people will respect it, especially when they clean your mug. And you've worked on that mug for months, like making sure that it's never clean because coffee itself actually cleans that stuff, okay?
I'm feeling...
tension, yes.
Tension.
I know. I had a cup. I was working on a cup. It was for espresso, man. Come on.
You guys can't see it, but he's doing the hand right now.
Anyways, in that,
yes.
We are building up your artillery.
So one thing I'm really excited for that I already have the equipment for, thanks to the lectures, is my cupping sets.
Yes.
And I think it's just really cool for me to come in and bring in just a general crash course for people to learn to appreciate tea and tea culture and just a way to bring it into your self-care routine.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Are you going to bring up where your resources come from, or are you just going to share what you've learned personally?
I'm going to share what I learned personally, and hopefully, because, hear me out.
Yes.
I love traveling for tea, but I understand that there are people out there that will not travel for tea.
Yes.
I mean, Eugene and I have been known to drive, what, 2-3 hours out just to have tea somewhere?
We found a tea shop in the middle of Orange County, and they do it properly, but it was in the middle of this construction site. But yeah. That was tenacity.
Yeah, it was.
We shouldn't have been there.
But see, we understand that there aren't people that are wired weird like us.
Yes.
And I think it would be really great for me to just make tea more accessible for these people.
Yeah.
And this community.
Okay.
Yeah. That's but lovely. Also, like, I just feel like it's the right audience. Like, people that are looking for... I mean, everybody's talking about dry January now, is it?
Yeah.
And, like, just the idea of, like, alternative drinks and, like, so ways to socialize without alcohol. I mean, tea is kind of one of those great beverages.
Yeah.
Just saying.
If you guys need a sedative, yeah, tea's definitely.
Yeah, it. So... really looking forward to just having a space where people can explore that comfortably.
Yeah.
And not feel like it's intimidating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh my goodness, I know that along the way we've been doing nothing but try to find books to kind of enjoy the silence. Because, Lord, we've
been working. Should probably talk about the book side of life, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean... okay, hear us out. When COVID was around, we were getting sick and tired of the silence. It was all that we did every day. And Steph did it better than me, personally. I think I went nuts.
He went nuts.
I went nuts. And we just couldn't concentrate, or I couldn't concentrate on the podcast as much as I would have loved to. I would have loved to keep talking, but I have been... away from people, away from, you know, just having different ideas. People disagree with me. I actually missed that. And it was just so fascinating that Steph was actually working on a memoir that we started to actually discuss, you know, what was, you know, what our favorite memoirs were.
Hmm.
At least in this way, we were able to actually speak without worry about, you know, the temptation of seeing people.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also interesting how memoirs are kicking up in popularity again, especially with Spare being such a buzz right now.
Yes.
Which I'm planning not to read that anytime soon. Sorry, people. Like, drug-induced privileged white people just don't do it for me. Oh. Though, you know, we'll see.
Come on, man. We have, like, the last rock and roll royalty still alive. Anyways,
I don't know. What, have you read some memoirs lately that you like?
Not more so that I actually would just remember them.
Mm.
Like, I didn't realize that I had an era. Like, I just
you couldn't... You had an era of memoirs?
Yeah, of, like, Michael J. Fox? Like, the man just kept writing about positivity, you know? And the weirdest thing is, like, you know, the guy has Parkinson's. And
yeah.
I didn't realize that was an era. Because nowadays, people are, like, reading, you know, Kevin Hart and, like, all these, you know, these new memoirs from all these, you know, movie stars. And all of a sudden, I actually found myself in a category of genres.
I mean, I'm looking over my list from last year, and I can tell you, I think I see a few memoirs in here.
Okay.
But the one, like, oh, go ahead.
Okay, but to just kind of finish my train of thought,
mm-hmm.
The thing that you know, that I was talking about with Michael J. Fox was all about positivity, all about positive thinking. I should say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not a political thing. It was literally his optimism.
Mm.
And I think a comedian said it best. I know that the economy is terrible, but man, this apple tastes great.
That just reminds me of the painting that you use as your wallpaper.
Oh, A Son of Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that classic art piece. Because it's true. Like, it's, you know, it's this guy that's in a very corporate design.
Yeah.
Kind of almost like a distinguishable man, but he has the apple in front of him.
It was just so funny. Because that's literally, you know, how people think over what those paintings were.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the guy just literally did not want to show his face. That's actually his self-portrait series.
Yeah, but that's so fascinating. Like, to me, it's like he just... It's like he's hiding his identity behind, like, a sense of optimism.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's lovely to think.
I don't know. That's the way I translate it.
No. That's fine. Because literally, that's what I've been bothered by the entire time we've been stuck at home, is that people haven't thought. That's kind of what I miss about going to museums, like, or art galleries. You know, when you actually go to an art gallery, you haven't met the artist yet, you don't know their mission statement, and then you have this thought.
Mm-hmm.
It must be about this. Like, yeah. Why is it drawn in crayon? Why are we looking at an airplane? Why is there a mouth sticking itself into, like a wire pole?
Like, well, that's interesting. I mean, while we're on the subject, if you could pick three of your favorite classical artists, who would they be?
You know me with Duchamp.
Duchamp. Okay, Marcel, you know, Duchamp.
Always with R. Arbat, man.
Surrealist, okay. My favorite is his Bachelor Stripped of Bride.
Oh, that piece. One. Yeah.
Never finished,
that was,
but...
Yeah, that was during his Cubist attempt. He was at the tail end of Cubism.
I know, and he never finished it, but to be fair, it was like a one-story size glass panel with oils. If you ever have the chance to look up the piece, it's basically... He tried to design a machine to translate hormones and emotions that go through somebody waiting for their bride.
Yes.
On their wedding night.
Yeah.
He never finished it, but it actually goes through all the fears and anticipations and flashbacks and everything, basically. He tried to make it as elaborate as possible. It's a really fascinating piece. Anyways, okay. So
I hate to be a cliche. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy Michelangelo.
That's a cliche?
It's a cliche. You name off any Ninja Turtle, and that is a cliche.
Okay. Okay, we'll go there.
Anyone remember Donatello? No one remembers Donatello. No? Nobody knows? Because he's a mathematician. That's why.
Okay, and what's your third one?
That's a silly one. I have no third one. At that point, everybody starts blurring in my eyes.
Rembrandt.
Yes, there you go. The master of shadows.
I'm
obsessed with the
you
guy.
You have so much Rembrandt stuff. Are you seriously gonna sit here and not bring him up?
I'm so sorry. Yeah, that was literally my identity throughout college.
It was. Yeah. In fact, ironically, well, not ironically, because I'm a nerd. My bachelorette party was going to the museum.
Yes.
And the, you know, all my bridesmaids loved it. But the portrait they were giving away, because they always give you a print at the end at the Norton Simon, was the Rembrandt self-portrait. And I got such a hoot out of that, because that's like Eugene's like glow-up desire, is to look like Rembrandt when he gets old, so.
Yeah. I know he's not the prettiest man, but dude, he looks good in shadows.
in the shadows.
Dude, come on, man. Like, don't tell me a guy in, you know, in like dim lighting is not going to look hot.
Okay, we can go many a directions with that. Let's see. If I had to pick, first off bat, definitely Matisse. I was just inspired to talk about this subject because Matisse's story is so sad.
Yes.
And if you know his life story, like, even when he started to become paralyzed, he would paint with his mouth. But he's one of my favorite, most inspiring artists. I actually have his piece up. I forgot which one this is called. This is actually one of his later works. I think it's part of his Sea Creature collection.
Yeah.
But those are the ones that he would cut out and glue because he couldn't paint in a large scale anymore.
I remember when we were taking playwright class in PCC.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote a play that's named Fauves 101.
Yes.
And all of our classmates literally thought we made that word up.
No! Like, Fauves is amazing. It means wild beast,
yeah,
right?
And the funny thing is, if you ever go to like a Spanish-style restaurant, they have one in Marina del Rey. Fantastic tea. Weirdo. I know. I get it. they practice the Fauves coloring. And even if you watch, like, the old early 2K Telemundo, was it soap operas? The colors of the walls were very Fauves. You know, you got, like, these wild colors. Like, you have, like, dark blue. Not navy blue. Dark blue. And then it's, like, right next to, like, this mustard yellow. And suddenly you find, like, this bright red out of nowhere. I think it was like their version of Ugly Betty. I was watching it. It was just like, wow, that's interesting.
Okay.
But anyways, I'm just saying, it's quite a life.
No, that's cool. I'm trying to think of some, I mean, I have a lot. I'm the art collector between the two of us. Well, Piet Mondrian, I had a total phase since you were talking about phases.
Yes.
I love Piet Mondrian. The one time I almost got kicked out of a museum was because I crossed the line to take a selfie with a Piet Mondrian, just to let you know. And it was so funny. I literally, like, locked eyes with the security guard, and he knew I was gonna do it. And I just, like, did it while staring him in the face, like, I did it. I'm done. What are you gonna do about it?
My gosh.
But I do not regret that. I think I have another selfie on my old Instagram. I'll have to find it with Warhol.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with Warhol self-portraits.
Which is so ironic because you never heard of Warhol until that one time that your family brought you to the museum.
And yeah, it was his, like, anniversary debut, and you were obsessed with it, but I was like, do you want to go? We were still friends at this point.
Like, it was early 2000. Again, we're like going back here.
Yeah.
Just because the fashion's here. It's a little weird to actually see like children versions of ourselves walking around high schools. Anyways, she told me she was going to a museum. I didn't know who the artist was. She didn't know who the artist was. She gets there, and then all of a sudden, she says it's Warhol. Mind you, I was watching IFC, the Independent Film Channel.
Oh, yeah, you were like a religious total beatnik wannabe when you were in high school. It was hilarious.
And out of nowhere, she tells me who this guy is, and I go nuts on her. I read, like, the entire, like, Warhol film list that I have in my hands. I don't know how I had it in my hands. I don't know why I actually had it in my hands. I didn't print anything. I just found it. I guess I was just being a klepto or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. They were actually showing some at the Egyptian Theater at the time.
Well, it was his certain or other anniversary, and that's why they had, like, they were celebrating him.
Yes.
Yeah, but it was a huge showcase of his life work at MoCA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what did MoCA stand for again?
Museum of Contemporary Art.
Oh, there we go. Not to be confused with MoMA.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so I love his self-portraits. In fact, the more and more I'm working on my memoir, the more and more I'm taking out, like, my old portraits that were inspired off of Warhol.
Yes.
And putting some of my photography and art in the book, too.
Yay.
Which is going to be really exciting, which is why I kind of decided to make it more of a coffee book style, because it's not just a writing book. There's going to be some of my art.
Yes.
Through the years. Yeah. In there. But yeah, you'll see a lot of my Warhol-inspired portraits. I feel like we went on a tangent, but...
No, this is fine, because it's been a while since, you know, people have known us right. On this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We've been quiet. We've been building. I mean, at this point, I'm trying to actually reopen the online bookstore for Azulorica.
Right.
We need...
Which will now hopefully have a location with Cove.
Yes.
Which was another thing I was excited about, is we're looking forward to having, like, actual in-person book releases.
Oh my goodness, at last!
Because how long have we been doing Azulorica online because of COVID?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it says something where our international filmmakers for our film festivals are tearing at the bit to fly over and find a location.
Yes.
But unfortunately, our original home at the Donald Wright Auditorium is no more.
Is it the Pasadena Central Library? Yeah,
it's actually not allowed anymore because the roof is caving in.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I had a cooler story, like the Professor Elemental story, which I'll have to add in the book now, but... Yes. No, there were no firemen and, like, harassment involved. It's really, like, the building is so old, it's caving in on itself.
Yeah.
And so our beautiful theater, we cannot touch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the long and the short of it.
That's all right. Because This is LA. We have more than one library to actually, you know, go to. Yeah,
and I noticed that everybody really loves the idea of holding it at a library.
Yes, they did. In fact, the fun part about having fan film awards is that we actually encourage everybody to go read comic books.
Mm-hmm.
So you get all these man children coming up to you and saying, oh my gosh, you totally understand me. I'm like, no, bro, I just really like video games. It's cool. But, yeah, it's wonderful. There are actual places that want us. There are places that we could finally bring these filmmakers to. And there's now a venue for them to actually pick up the swords.
Yes.
Because their trophies are literally...
are a nightmare to ship. We've been trying. I can't begin to tell you guys how many of them we've shipped internationally. And then they come back like a month later beaten up. Because of the return, and we can't predict it, you know?
No, and the thing is, like, even the wholesale companies are having a hard time trying to keep up, because... Yep.
We've gone through how many manufacturers. I miss when the swords were made by my dad, but that was so tedious.
It was. As beautiful as the craft was.
He is getting older, so we just can't. No. Ask anymore, unfortunately.
That's all right. That's all right. That's like the story of the rest of all the artisans in Red Fair. Okay? Like, we need more artisans now than ever, because the old generation, they've all retired. And I didn't believe it until COVID happened.
Right.
So, please.
I'm, like, trying to cover our bases right now. We're rolling into...
Oh, hold on. What about the whole memoir thing?
That's where we were.
That's where we were.
Check back. Okay, so you brought up Michael J. Fox.
Yes.
I did just finish a very fascinating memoir that I highly recommend. It's called... Actually, I have two. But the one that was really fascinating was called The Elephant in My Backyard.
Oh, okay.
It's by Rajiv Surendra. Sorry, I didn't mean to butcher you. He's recently picked up his YouTube channel. And it's been really, like, my ASMR.
Wait a minute. Is this the guy that keeps, like, folding everything properly and, like, washing his white shirts?
It's kind of like it's like Golden Ages in the sense that he's bringing back all these traditional practices.
Yeah.
Like teaching men how to maintain a really nice white crisp shirt.
Yeah.
He's interesting. He's like a whole new level, but,
You're telling me. He's like domestic god.
He's domestic god.
He's domestic god, okay? You, like, ladies have had domestic goddesses, but this dude, it's a dude!
I love how he takes it to a whole new level. Like, he'll dumpster dive, like, a classical piece of furniture with good bones, and then take it to an actual upholsterer. And then actually sit there and, like, this is one of his episodes, by the way. He'll film the episode of the upholsterer teaching you the art and the craft that actually goes into professional upholstery.
You hear this, guys? Do you hear this?
It
has been, like, a salacious ordeal just watching these YouTube videos.
He is so hot, though. I'm not gonna lie. But no, so his memoir is so fascinating to me because, so he made he's an actor. Yes. And he made his film debut in Mean Girls. He's the guy who did the math rap. But the reason why it's called Elephants in My Backyard is because he really wanted to be casted as the main character in Life of Pi.
Yes.
And he was in the industry and he knew that there were talks of the book being turned into a movie. And so he, like, honest to God, like, did everything in his power to fit this role. And the whole book is about this. It goes into him, like, he takes plebe to a whole new level. Yes. In the best way. Like, he actually traveled to the original location that the book takes place in, and he lived there for a few months, just to know what it was like. I think it was Ponderosa was where he lived for a while, and he experienced the culture. He even, like, read books and befriended people who survived shipwrecks.
Yeah.
In order to understand life as a shipwreck survivor.
And the thing is, this is India.
Yeah, he went to India, but he's from Canada.
Yeah, but needless to say, India in itself is a crazy odyssey of cultures, history, and, like, 300 languages to actually go through.
No, and it was such a, like, I had such an appreciation for it because for someone who, like, on my side of the world, I have not been exposed to Indian culture. I don't even know, like, the respectful way to call them sometimes. And it's just so fascinating that he's born and raised in Canada, but he's Tamil.
Okay.
And he's heard of it because his parents went through it.
Right.
And for him to be kind of like the equivalent of an ABC, American born Chinese, or for me, like, I'm a Filipino, but I've never gone to the Philippines kind of thing. It's just fascinating to see that culture shock and then learning how to overcome it. It's like seeing something that's familiar, but not at the same time. And it's very intimidating.
Right.
And the way that he approached it. And I, as someone who can relate to that, I mean, I haven't gone to the Philippines yet, but I'm married to a person that was raised in the Philippines.
Hey.
And sometimes, like, I'm so removed from that. I think it's so fascinating. Like, you know, sometimes me and Eugene will be talking, and then he'll just say stuff that blows my mind. He'll be like, oh, I miss the days when I would just run around in my flip-flops and have fights with spiders and matchboxes. And I'm like, what in the third world are you talking about? But it's so fascinating to just, like, see a slice of that world.
Yeah.
And just, it's, to me, like, that's one of my goals this year, is just to see the world from a different pair of eyes as yeah. much as possible.
Well, that's been the theme, I think, for a lot of people. They've been craving that ever since the whole COVID issue had lifted.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to travel. Everybody wants to know what life is outside of all of this.
Yeah, but not let... I guess I appreciate more of the non-glamorous side of travel. I want more of the understanding of a different world.
Yeah, instead of going to Paris, if you were going to France...
I don't want to get a baguette. I want to literally walk the streets and see the history and...
Well, you kind of want to go to northern France most of all, if you
yes,
to go.
Yes, I do. I want to see the lavender fields and... Okay, hear me out. I really want to try, like, fresh padded butter. Mm. I want to see what this butter turf war that they mention, but no one fully explains.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know, what is this butter turf war that the French speak of in different cities?
And that's where we're going to start.
Yeah.
Ever we go.
Well, we will. It's just a matter of when. And then another book I picked up, which was a freebie on Audible, and I was so shocked because it was really lovely. And it got a lot of not so great reviews, but I appreciated it.
Right.
Is The 7 Kinds of People You Find in Bookshops.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And this was written by Sean Bithell. And oh my God, I love his books. I know everybody hates how snarky he is and sarcastic. And everybody thinks like he's a total like... arrogant jerk, but I think it's book humor. It was so entertaining for me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It was so like no hold punches kind of like sarcasm. It was dark humor.
Dark humor.
Sure. I okay. really loved it.
Okay. Okay.
I also have actually I did have to reserve this book. And I haven't touched it yet, but I'm excited, is actually The Diaries of Alan Rickman.
Oh.
I'm so freaking pumped for that. But he has confessions of his, like, personal opinion on all the actors during Harry Potter. Apparently, she said that Emma Watson was a horrible actress. Like, he just... I don't know. It feels like a modern version of Samuel Pepys' diary confessions, but the reason why this book is so significant for the film arts industry, I don't want to say the industry, because it's not, is everyone swears that Alan Rickman had such good impeccable taste that if he agreed to work on your stuff, you were guaranteed success, because he had impeccable taste, and he actually... immediately joined Rowling because he knew that there was some talent there.
All
right. Raw talent. And that's why he stuck with her to the bitter end.
Wow.
And he actually confesses this in his diaries. So, can't wait to read it.
It's lovely.
And then another one that I'm dying to get a hold of is they recently published The Letters of Robert Stevenson and J.M. Barrie's correspondence as pen pals together.
Oh.
I am so excited for that book.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So basically the author of Peter Pan and the author of, what is it, Treasure Island?
Right.
Yes. They would correspond and they were each other's writing buddies.
Wow.
What a relationship, right?
Yes.
So I can't wait to read those.
Okay.
Anyways.
No, please, please, carry
on. Do you
on.
Have any recommendations?
My recommendations, apart from Wallace Shawn, I know
that's a good one.
Yeah, he's written a whole bunch of essay books, and I swear he's going to be like my next obsession, because one book already did it for me, and knowing that there are plenty more is just going to build my library.
Mm.
Ironically, I've only just been going through, weird books that have been released lately. Like, the one that you've... It's in the realm that you, of the books that you've mentioned, But it's not as, like, you know, spiritually inclined or, like, literally, literary inclined. Powers of Darkness.
What in the hell is that?
The lost version of Dracula.
Oh, you were telling me about that. Yes! Okay, so real talk. I never realized how much I love Dracula until it's been years. I cannot shake it. It is such a good read.
It's fun. That's
just
why.
Classical Dracula.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, the story of this book is the Icelandic version was translated, and for some reason, the translator had this wild idea to add characters, to add scenes. It is bloodier, lustier than the original version.
So this guy just went ham.
He went ham. It's a completely different book. And it went, and it bypassed everybody for what? I think 20 years? What was it? Oh my gosh. I'm like so obsessed with the idea that this is your Valentine present. Okay, this is your Valentine present.
Oh, this is good.
I am so sorry, love. But you're going to have
this. I'll be working on Valentine's Day. Actually, the soft release for Cove is on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So, thank you.
But this bypassed everybody and nobody cared to actually fix it. So now we have an English translation.
So it's like an epic fanfic that was never released as a fanfic for the Icelandic people that like Dracula.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. It was translated and published in 1901. This is a 100-year-old book, love.
That's hilarious.
This is culture.
It's like just bad humor at its finest.
Oh my god. Like, copyrights did not stop this from growing. This is what we could have had if they didn't stop the Conan, like the Sherlock Holmes fan fiction back in the Victorian era with that stupid copyright rule, and we could have had like more, you know, Sherlock Holmes.
We are not getting into your personal vendetta with the Sherlock Holmes
copyright holding.
We can leave that for another episode.
Oh, but the plays, love. The plays were so good.
Anyways.
Anyways, fine.
What else? Let's see. What else did I read?
I've been reading, ironically, martial arts books. I'm sorry. I've been reading like Jiu-Jitsu Gracie books. I've been reading Bartitsu. And I know, like, some of my friends are probably tired and feeling really awkward about it because, like, it's nerdy that I'm actually, you know, studying, like, an old form of Rex Kwon Do. But it's Rex Kwon Do. Like, a one says, like, dude, this is so cool. But obviously, like, for the local literati, they're just kind of looking at me like a Neanderthal. Like, excuse me? You're going to be waving your fists like the old-timey-wimey
fighters? It's okay. You had a whole thing with Bartitsu the other year, right?
Yes, yes. And
it's a journey.
It's been a journey. Like, I have, like, found a way to actually use it in practical matters in, you know, in our modern-day fighting style. Like, come on, man. Southpaw, Philly, the Philly shell.
Philly shell.
That's what it's called, the Philadelphia shell. You know, like, it's how you do the defense. Like, you could actually use it. And then, obviously, jujitsu, the one martial arts that everyone's like, they're just railing it. They don't like it because it's all huggy-feely. It's like choosing to have your child go to soccer practice instead of football. It's not as manly, you know?
Interesting.
I know. It's weird. The whole martial arts culture, it's being dissected right now. If it's not from me, guys, you are probably hearing it from, like, Shaolin martial artists that are actually trying out karate. You are probably hearing it from, like, English guys that are, like, doing, you know, gutter fighting. Like, really, everyone's going through, like, a deconstruction.
Didn't we have a discussion the other day about how Muay Thai is becoming popular.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're getting older, and Muay Thai doesn't actually need speed. It's all about power. So it's amazing for, like, 30-year-olds and people getting older or slower that just love to bulk up.
Interesting.
But the problem is, you know, Muay Thai, your body's always aching. There is not a day where it aches. Which is kind of cool if you love that style, if you love the pain. If you don't want to do tattoos, because good God, that's how I kept away from tattoos.
The pain?
Yeah, that's what people are addicted to.
I literally didn't do tattoos because I couldn't make my mind up.
Yeah, no, I'm there too.
I change my mind all the time, just like, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine having something permanent on me and be like, oh.
I know.
So not me anymore.
But you know what? We're going to be looking forward to a retirement home filled with gray skins.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Let's see. What other books? Oh, so I've been reading a lot of, like, I wouldn't call it, I mean, I guess some of them are in the self-help genre, but, like, obscure versions of them.
Okay.
Like, one I just finished, which was really great, was Tenacious Abundance.
Oh.
And it was published in October 18, 2022, so it's a fairly new book. But it's literally this guy, he's one of those guys that have just read so much self-help book and so much podcast, and he knows what people are looking for.
Yeah.
So there's, like, apparently this book that's famous from the 1930s, like How to Get Rich or something, and I forgot the title. It's a really popular book. But he says, this is my favorite and most effective book, but it hasn't been updated since the 1930s. So I'm going to do an updated rendition of it, and I'm literally going to give you the points in, like, 3 points, and you can sum this up in 5 minutes.
Huh.
And so it's, like, not a waste of your time at all. Loved it. I love that concept. But the things that I took away from it is just learning to be a reader. Yes. And how that's a valuable asset. And also how to study. Like, the shortcut of the long and the short of what you need when you study.
Yeah.
So I love that. another book that I read the other time that was so fascinating was A Billion Wicked Thoughts. What the world's largest experiment reveals about human desire. So this group of people realize that the internet's old enough that, I mean, obviously porn is a big issue on the internet.
Right.
But what people don't realize is we've had enough data of people's search engines and the way people live that we know the overall idea of what's the most popular, like, secret fantasy of people, or what makes a person in this position tick.
Right.
And what makes search engines of desire for women versus men different. And it's fascinating because it's more about the, like, the anthropologic side.
Okay.
Of people's desires and what it means in our society and the way that we were taught.
Okay.
And it breaks it down to what people expect in relationships and ideals and expectations.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's a really good read. Let me see. It's by Sai Gautam and O.G. Ogus. It's really good. I highly recommend it. And, you know, we could even update it more, but this was released in 2011.
Huh. So all right.
We could definitely have a return to this, but highly recommend the book. Love it. And I'm trying to think if there's another one. Oh, a fun mention is Stupid Things I Won't Do When I Get Old.
Oh, okay.
This one's by Steven Petro, and it's actually about a guy that's in his 50s taking care of his mother who's in her 80s.
Oh.
And seeing the change in old people as you age.
Yeah.
And, like, things they do that are stereotypes that, and, like, ways to combat it.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting read. It was definitely out of my comfort zone, but I got to not only hear about change in life through someone older than me, but seeing how the older generation affected their change.
Right.
So it was a fun, again, with that whole different perspective sort of thing.
Exactly. But
anyways, we've been talking for quite some time.
Yes, don't be conscious.
I am conscious. I haven't done this for a while. Come on. I've been a little hermit in my writing shed.
That's also not a bad thing. I mean, at least I have something to publish here. Come on.
Oh.
Yes, I know. In the publishing world, it's been weird, really weird, because everybody has been writing, everybody has been publishing. You know, like, I have never seen so many books actually released online so quickly. But at the same time, so many bookstores are dying.
Yeah.
And I'm just surprised now to ever see an independent bookstore still alive.
Did you see the new... So upon doing my research for my current book, I found the new press statements for... What do you call it? Barnes & Noble CEO.
Oh?
And their business strategies.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, but the way that they're planning on saving even just Barnes & Nobles is... they're going to definitely bring in a wider cafe culture. Which, you know what? Shame on you for getting rid of Borders Cafe.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. I actually, with pride, have an entire essay about that in my new story, in my new memoir book.
It's like Borders was doing it right
there.
Yeah,
man. So, you know what? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, guess what? We're back to it.
You have become what you have destroyed.
Exactly. So they're doing that. But another thing I thought was really fascinating is instead of just pumping out bestsellers, they're going to really focus on local recommendations. And so they're going to try to book a more knowledgeable staff. And that's actually what's going to qualify you. To work at these bookstores is you have to be a reader, because staff recommendations are what's going to make them thrive.
My God.
Which, I mean, we not really think about this?
We didn't learn. Oh my God, it's repeating itself. This is the same problem we had in the 90s.
What?
Do you remember? You don't remember. Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay. Whenever... like, my English teachers or any of my teachers actually told us, you gotta buy yourself this copy of the book, the school won't provide it. They always gave us a warning. They always told us, don't mind the booksellers, the clerks, when they snob you. They're gonna look at you funny that you don't know what Dante's Inferno is. They're going to look at you funny that you had to even try to pronounce a certain Shakespeare word. And they're not going to actually teach you.
Right.
And I went through that. Okay? I went through that. And mind you, I was in a private school. It was Christian. So obviously, a lot of these books I've never even heard of. I mean, I'm even surprised that we had the Scarlet Letters available.
A really great book.
Yeah.
Still love it.
But really? You're going to let Scarlet Letters actually push through? I mean, like, we had a hard time even getting Shakespeare.
I remember when I was in a Christian homeschooling group at one point, and they didn't let us read 1984.
Oh, my God.
And now looking back at it, I'm like, no, that's important.
Yeah.
You know?
But no, then the same problem is occurring, because that's literally the criteria. That was the criteria prior.
Mm.
You know, if you didn't know, you know, Dante's Inferno, you weren't even considered for a position at Barnes & Noble.
Well, they're really heavily relying on staff recommendations, but that doesn't necessarily mean classics.
Understood.
Yeah.
Which is really awkward, because that's literally what
our education thrived on. What they're trying to say is, based on the demographic of the town,
right,
will determine what is sold there, so there is less book waste.
Okay.
Because basically, instead of sending multiple amounts of the same section,
yes,
they're just going to beef up the sections that are heavily recommended by the staff.
So basically, we're going to see a lot of niche.
Yes.
Exactly. No. The Nietzsche, the philosopher.
Oh.
Because literally an entire emo generation read nothing but Nietzsche and, like,
see, I was more terrified of just nothing but smut and romance novels.
Yeah, I could see that.
So.
Definitely could see that.
Yes.
Lord mercy.
I mean, yes, there's smut. There's a place for smut, which, by the way, on Eugene's birthday last year, I brought you to the Ripped Bodice.
Oh, that was so much fun.
I'm still so trying to get through a book right now. I'm currently reading Moonshine Manor.
Yes.
It's different.
Okay.
Not my cup of tea normally, but I do appreciate the diversity.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Try it, you know. It's the first recommended book that you've actually reviewed on, you know, on the podcast, guys. Like, Steph finally did a book review. Dun, dun, dun!
What?
That's what we just did. Anyways.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what is going on with the book industry, but also, the way we're going to be able to preserve and continue tea culture. I can't say really preserve, because I just feel like tea culture is a constant moving thing.
It should be. It's something that changes.
Yeah.
Which is what people aren't talking about. And I'm kind of sad.
But it's so exciting.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to taking you on the ride. But we're hoping that Bibliosinensis becomes more of a space to just be candid.
Yes.
About everything with you.
And because we hope we can make more episodes.
Yeah.
That just speak to our audience again.
I guess think of this more as a digital cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, thank you everyone for joining us.
And listening to our rants. We should definitely go out and get more caffeine.
Yes. Caffeine. Not enough caffeine. Yes. Janeway, Star Trek.
Cheer, world.
Cheers.